Okay, all right. Let's get right to it. Dr. Henry Nyman is back. It's Monday already, Henry. Welcome back. Lots has happened, including Hong Kong recording its first death officially, a 39-year-old man, just in a little while ago. I'm sure you had it earlier. So, where are we, my friend?
Just like you said, a lot has happened. Numbers have gone up pretty dramatically. Some new sequences are out. And there's a new report that kind of addresses the case fatality rate, although indirectly. So we can get through all of this.
Yeah, let me say one thing. When we get to the case fatality rate, if you're new to this particular special report we do each night with Henry, pay close attention. There is so much statistical misdirected information out there. All right, we'll leave it at that.
They're basically talking points. The 2.2, it might change. Yeah, that's okay. The latest.
All right.
Said by many officials, and it's well into the wishful thinking category.
You
but anyway,
betcha.
Let's go through the numbers here first, because they have increased pretty dramatically. Just to give you an idea, on Friday, I reported Friday night, the numbers had gone up to 29,779, which is broken down as 11,791 confirmed and 17,988 suspects. Now, most of the media is ignoring the suspect side, and they're just reporting the confirmed. And so your listeners, if they didn't hear Friday's show and just heard what the numbers were during the day, the confirmed cases were only 9,692. So it was under 10,000. It was a little bit above what the total was for the entire SARS outbreak. And the numbers tonight are, the total is up to 43,652, and that includes 20,438. So it's more than double what it was Friday during the day. It was less than 10,000. Now it's over 20,000. Mm-hmm. And there's 23,214 suspects. They're actually catching up a little bit. The gap between the suspect and the confirmed is now down to about 3,000, whereas at the end of the week, it was closer to 6,000. So they're catching up and getting these suspects tested a second time and getting them moved over to the confirmed category. And so those that are just looking at the confirmed, they're going to see essentially a doubling since Friday afternoon until, well, they probably won't hear about it till tomorrow unless they're listening to this show. But in any event, it's up to 43,000. And it's going up, if you count the suspect and confirmed together, it's right around 5,000 a day. And under 5,000. And that number, is not that far from the entire SARS outbreak over 6 months, which was around 8,000. And
sir,
so in 2 days, any 2 days since last Tuesday, the 2 day total is more than the 6 month total for SARS. So any 2 days starting a week ago, if you add the 2 days together, they'll be over 8,000. And, so it's going on at a pretty good clip. And if you count the confirmed suspect, it's up to 43,000. There were reports like a week ago that, the vast undercount and there's 70 to 100,000 in China. And, the numbers they've got here aren't that far off. And, these are PCR confirmed. These aren't counting the ones that, people are walking in the door and they haven't tested them yet. And it is pretty dramatic, and that's why there is a significant amount of concern, and that may be why some of these numbers that are coming out are artificially low. And another one on the cases, the number of cases in the U.S. Increased very dramatically since we last talked. There was Santa Clara was on, I think, Friday.
Yes.
And then that was followed by one in Boston on Saturday. And then it was followed by three in California yesterday. There was one, a second one in Santa Clara, unrelated to the first one. And then there were two in San Benito, which were husband and wife. So that was another. It was another example that was similar to what happened in Chicago. In this case, the husband went to Wuhan, got infected, and came back. And then his wife, who did not go to China, got infected in California. So that was another clear example of human-to-human transmission, where a person who was a contact and didn't go to China ended up getting infected by, and in this case, the spouse.
The great majority of these are Chinese nationals or people who are American who have gone to China. We're just not seeing yet a lot of European Americans, shall we say, or African Americans infected. We're just pretty much
not
Chinese.
Not in the U.S., but not in Germany. I mean, Germany, it's most of the ones that are, and I'm going to talk about that because that number just went up again. So
the
Germany's
cluster,
up to 12. The cluster's
12?
Up to 12 now.
Uh-huh.
Well, 12 if you count the index in Singapore and the one that went on vacation to Canary Islands. So there's actually
right.
10 in Germany itself. There's another employee that's in the Canary Islands, and there's the original index case who went back to Singapore. Now, there's actually an update on that index case. It turns out that, the report says she developed symptoms on the plane going home. But
right.
Now science is coming out and saying that, well, they didn't really interview her. They interviewed the employees, and the employees said she didn't have symptoms. But uh-huh. then somebody interviewed her directly, and she indicated that, well, she was feeling a little achy, and she was tired, and she was taking Tylenol or something. And so she did kind of have nonspecific symptoms while she was still there. She wasn't coughing. She wasn't, it wasn't obvious that she had, pneumonia or anything. But she started getting those types of symptoms on the way back. But, on close, questioning on specifics of exactly how did you feel while you were there, he did mention that she was tired and felt a little achy before she went back. So technically, she probably wasn't asymptomatic, but in reality, she had the types of symptoms that most people are, I would say probably most people would go about their business and figure it's nothing to worry about and it's not going to be an issue. So they would still probably go to school or go to work, and then if mm-hmm. it didn't get better, they might do something about it. But her situation when she was at work was, not in the category where I think I've got this pneumonia coming on. But
right.
in any event,
right.
let's back up a little bit to the case fatality rate.
Right. All right. Hold on. We refer to this on the program often for you newcomers. as CFR, case fatality rate, there's only one legitimate clinical scientific way to project an accurate CFR, and Henry will explain it once again.
Yeah. Well, typically, when they talk about CFRs in the, for an outbreak, they basically have the outcomes for everybody that was diagnosed as a positive and met the case definition. And so the CFR, under those circumstances, is pretty straightforward. You just look at how many people died. That's the fatality rate. And divided by, that's the fatalities. And the rate is divided by, the total number. The ones that died and survived. So you have the total number of people that were diagnosed. And that's the denominator, and the numerator is how many died. Mm-hmm. And when it's ongoing, and the vast majority of the cases are in the hospital, and you don't really know whether they're going to live or die, the only real way to get a feel for what the final's going to look like is to look at the ones that you already have an outcome. They've either been discharged or they've died, and then you add the two numbers together to get the total that were diagnosed, and that gives the case fatality rate.
Resolution is what Henry is saying.
Right.
The case has to be resolved one way or the other, or you cannot project accurately.
Right. And what WHO is doing now, and they did for SARS, was they took the number that died and divided it by all of the cases that have been diagnosed at the time, most of whom were in the hospital. And a high number of those ended up dying. So the number they come up with is the number that if everybody that's been diagnosed and is currently alive today survives, then that would be an accurate number. But there's no data that says they're going to survive. So because the numbers on this novel coronavirus are going up so quickly that most of the people that have been diagnosed have not been in the hospital very long, and they haven't really had a chance to die. And so they're taking the number of deaths and they're dividing it by this very large number, and they're coming up with a 2.2% case fatality rate. And they did this in SARS. And, I complained about it loudly, and there were articles written on it. I actually dug out one of them when I complained enough that it was written up in Wired magazine. And they said dispute among docs or something. And at that point, it was 4%. So I think it had started around 2% was the number they were throwing out. And by then it was up to 4%. It ended up at 10%, but that was even a low number because the ones in Taiwan basically said that the sick ones, the ones that were very critical, they didn't test because they said it was too dangerous to test. And then when they died, they cremated them because they said it was too dangerous to transport the body. And they classified. I mean, they didn't say they didn't have SARS because it's obvious that they did, but they called them SARS-like because they were never tested to
not
show that they did have SARS.
Not formally officially tested.
And I used to write that,
I saw that article, Henry, by the way. I saw you, troublemaker, you. I saw that article. That was good.
Yeah. Well, there were a bunch of them, actually. But it was at 4%. I wasn't complaining enough when it was at 2%. So it had already gone up to 4%. And then there's subsequent articles, and I said, you're given this artificially low number, and as you go along, the number's going to keep on going up, and people are going to think that it's getting worse, and it's not really getting worse. It's just getting more accurate, you know, because it's been at this higher level all along. You've just been underplaying it, and it's creeping up. And the same thing's going to happen with this one, because they're putting out, it's at 2.2%. And they're dividing the number of deaths by this very large number. And you can get a hint of where it's going just from today's numbers. I mean, today's numbers that had the 40,000 cases, the number of deaths now is up to 425. And the number of discharges actually went up a little bit more. It's up to 632. So it's running around 40% for a case fatality rate. Now, it's probably going to come down from that, but it's not going to go down to 2%. And so to get an idea of what the real case fatality rate is, there have been two papers that have come out in Lancet. And the first paper focused on the first 41 cases in Wuhan. And if you recall, the number of confirmed cases was stuck at 41. Once they actually had the PCR test and tested, the number had gotten up to 59, but that was really based more on the symptoms because they didn't have the sequence and they didn't have a test. Once they got the test, they brought that down to 41, and then the number kind of sat at 41, and everybody was kind of wondering, you know, why is it sitting at 41? And you're exporting the virus to other countries or reporting it. There's clearly more cases. There are cases in people leaving the country, but there's no cases at the epicenter. But they were stuck at 41, and a paper came out in Lancet that looked at the first 41 cases. So it looked at the 41 that were PCR confirmed. And when it came out, 6 had died and 28 had been discharged. So if you made the calculation using the outcomes, that would have come out to like 17.6% for a CFR. But they, of course, went and so there were 7 that they didn't have an outcome for yet. So they had 34 and 7 were still in the hospital. So they assumed that all 7 of those would recover based on nothing and said, well, it's 14.6%. So that was the best that they could get out of the first 41. So if all 7 that were in the hospital were discharged, the final CFR for the first 41 people would have been 14.6%. And, then a second paper came out, and that second paper came out like on Friday. And it was also on the cases in Wuhan. And they had increased the numbers that they were studying to 99. So now there were 99. And if you do the math, this wasn't 99 brand new patients. This was the first 99. So it included the 41. So They had 58 more patients in the study that they, you know, said what the demographics were and what their symptoms were, and so they lumped them all together.
And many of those had the first generation, so to speak, of the there was a less virulent form in the very beginning.
Right. So these are the early ones, and so they got the number up to 99. And they ended up saying, out of these 99, there were 11 deaths. And they said, well, so the case fatality rate, 11%. but then they said, well, you know, there's 11 deaths and it's 99%. And but we only had 31 discharges. So we had outcomes on 42, and you know the CFR could go higher. They admitted it could go higher. Now, if they wanted to be specific, they should have been able to say, "And we've got an update on the first 41 because we've got outcomes on 8 more cases.
Correct.
And so right now it's unclear if those 8 included all 7 of the ones that were in the hospital. So it's conceivable that all 7, that all 41 have now outcomes. But if those 7 are included in their 8 new ones, they didn't all survive, because for the 8 new ones they had, 5 died. So they only had 5 deaths and 3 discharges out of the 8 new outcomes.
And so, I hope all of you are getting this. This is really important.
Right.
And go on.
So if you take those numbers, if you assume that those 8 included the first set, the 7 that were still in the hospital, so if all 41 are now out of the hospital and they're either discharged or have died, well, then the best number you could come out with under that scenario is 3 of the 7 were discharged and 4 of the 7 died.
Mm-hmm.
And so if 4 of them died, that would bring the total up to 10 for the first 41. And that would give you a case fatality rate of 24.4%. And if it turned out that the one that wasn't in the first group actually was discharged, then that would mean that 5 of the 7 died. You'd have 11 deaths, and then the case fatality rate would be 26.8%. So it's around 25% if indeed the 7 that were discharged were among the 8 new ones that they had outcomes for. And it's conceivable that it hasn't changed. It's conceivable that those 7 are still in the hospital and the 8 are all in the 58 ones they've added on. But that would mean that they're sitting at like a 63% case fatality rate for the outcomes in the second group.
Right.
So either way you look at it, the numbers are nowhere near the 14% that they had for the 41, and they're nowhere near the 11% that they've got for the full 99. They're in the ballpark of 25%. And of course, 25% is nowhere near the number that they're saying, well, it's not as bad as SARS, it's only 2%. Now, SARS was around 10%. MERS is around 35%. And there's really no real data that shows that this current outbreak is really going to be less than SARS. And the data they've got with outcomes, either if they look at the first 41 that were at Wuhan, and it seems to be spreading more quickly since then, or if you look at the outcomes for the first a little over 1,000 cases, it's around 40%. I mean, it's high. There's 425 deaths out of a little over 1,000. The total outcomes is 1,057. So it's running right around 40% for the outcomes for the first 1,000 outcomes. So it's not 2%, and you know, 25% is probably at best, and in all likelihood, it's well into the double digits, somewhere between the 20% and 40% range, and that's a horrible number. And now it could be that that's just people that are dominated by people in Wuhan. They've got the majority of the cases, but now it's showing up in the other cities. And they may be the ones that are really sickest and go to the hospital, whereas people that are kind of sick, like some of the ones that are being picked up in other countries, that they aren't necessarily that sick, but they are picked up because they go to the hospital, or they go to the doctor early and say, I'm from Wuhan or I'm from China, and I got early symptoms, and they get put in the hospital, and they maybe have some of the milder cases then. Whereas in Wuhan, only the ones that are really sick end up going to the hospitals because they know that the hospitals are overcrowded and there's a lot of people with the virus.
Now they've opened this new hospital. Right. Yeah, but still, the hospitals are telling people, if you're sick, go home. Go home. Take care of yourself.
Yeah.
Self-isolate, quarantine, and deal with it. That's what they're telling people.
Right. And so the numbers may be artificially reduced there because the milder cases, they're saying don't bother coming in. And the more severe cases, it's not clear that if they die before they come, where they actually get tested,
are they counted?
The test on.
That's right. Are they counted?
Right,
or they just trucked off to the crematory.
Right. And in Taiwan, they definitely didn't count them because they weren't tested. And it's unclear, you know, that once they've died, whether they're actually doing the testing, you know, they're going to assume they're positive and they're going to handle the body as if it was infected. And frankly, they wouldn't have the test back before they had to do something with the body anyway. So, you know, the test is really
Henry,
after
look,
the
when
fact.
When someone dies, whether at home or in the hospital, is their body just, because of the replication factor of this virus, is their body just, talk about a heavy viral load, are they just crawling with it everywhere? Is it just...
Well, they would be. They typically are. There's some other videos, and I can't tell you how authentic they are, but there was one that was kind of striking, and it's the type that, you know, it could have been, you know, it might not be real, but they
showed... The one in the bed, going through spasms?
No, not that one. This was two bodies in the street, both laying on their back with masks and, you know, not moving and really, you know, looking like they're not alive. And they were, it looked like they might have been brought to the street because they were kind of parallel next to each other, lying down next to each other. And the audio and video with that film said that they both died from myocarditis, that basically the virus was attacking their heart and that they just died suddenly from that. And they're not testing those that have, you know, heart issues that as the cause of death. They're just not being tested. And that's why you're seeing people dead on the street, is they're dying because of their heart failure. And so I don't know how accurate that is, but that is at least one of the videos that's out there, and it is showing two bodies. And people are looking at the bodies. There's nobody there, you know, dressed up in a hazmat suit. So, I mean, a lot of the other ones, it was pretty clear that these were people that it wasn't clear for sure whether they were alive or dead, but they were definitely being picked up.
To wrap up what Henry said, and I think it's really important for all of you to keep this in mind, we are not fear-mongering. This isn't fear porn. We're telling you straight. The case fatality rate, the best projection we can make with the data that we have, as flawed as it may be, is somewhere between 24 and 40, early 40, low 40% mortality rate from this. In other words, it isn't 2.2, and people who get this virus are not shaking it off in a week to 10 days and going home and going back to work, even if they could go back to work. This is a nasty, nasty virus. It doesn't give up and go away easily. And if we end up with a case fatality rate in the end, whenever the end may be, of 25%, that will be probably the all-time high, at least in our recorded times. The Spanish flu allegedly had a CFR of 3%, and it killed, 18, 20 million people? Who knows? A lot.
50 million. It might have been as high as 5%, but it was devastating. And In that case, about a third to half of the population got the flu. So that's why the number dead was so high, was because, you know, everybody got it, or 50% or 30% of the people got it, and of the world's population. So you end up with a lot of dead, even if it's 5% or so of the total. And that's always been the concern, is that you're going to get something that's going to have that type of fatality rate, and it's going to attack, a high percentage of the total right. population.
Now, the other side of that coin is critically important, and it has to do with what Henry has described as survival of the fittest. We're talking about this virus, as if it had a thought process, is designed and driven to survive. And the more easily it can infect a host, the more likely it is to survive. That's the mutation. I'm keeping this real simple. That's the mutation factor here. That's what Henry's right. watching. Henry's got his head buried in DNA sequences all day. He's watching this to see what kind of changes are going on. What do you know about that, and what can you share at this point?
Okay. Well, that's concerning also, and the new data was that the sequences were released on the cluster. It's cluster of two in England, and this involves another college student. A lot of the cases are college students that are basically had gone to
college abroad,
and then came back to their home. So this is somebody who's in York, in England, Yorkshire, whatever they have, a county or whatever. But it's the city of York, and I think it's the University of York as a student. But this is a 23-year-old male. The report said that a relative was also infected. The other sequence came from a 50-year-old female, which could very well be his mother. And the sequences were released, and as far as the two victims being related, they definitely were, that they shared two mutations that are relatively rare, haven't really been seen in others, and they both had both of them. And so that indicated that they either both were exposed to the same common source, or one infected the other one. So it's a cluster of two because they're in the same location around the same time, but it's also a cluster because they both have the same virus. So there was some type of event, either one transmitting the other, or they're both being exposed to another source. And the sequence showed that it was the same lineage that was involved with the first cluster in the United States. That was in Chicago. That was a husband and wife. The wife went to Hunan, Hubei province again, Wuhan, and got infected, came back, and then infected her husband. And so those are the two positives. Her sequence is out, and it's the same lineage as the cluster in England. And in fact, it's the same lineage that is most of the sequences in the United States. So, and what it has is this mutation in what's called the ORF8. ORF stands for open reading frame, and it's open reading frame number 8. And the first case in the United States was in Washington State near Seattle, Tacoma. That case was written up in the New England Journal of Medicine, and it just came out the end of last week also. And they specifically say in the paper that it had one mutation. It changed the protein sequence, and it was in open reading got it in writing that he had ORF8, and that's the one I've been talking about. And that kind of defines the lineage. It's that mutation plus one upstream in the ORF1AB gene, but that one doesn't actually change the protein. So, but it does kind of define the lineage. So those two markers kind of define this lineage. And I mentioned it previously because the first time I saw it was when three sequences from Guangdong province, Shenzhen is the city in Guangdong province, and they were listed as a family cluster. And the sequence actually showed that they had the ORF8 mutation as well as the upstream mutation in ORF1AB, and they had one downstream mutation in the N gene. And all three family members had the same three mutations, so it's clearly human-to-human transmission there. And then I checked out what the status was of Guangdong province, because they put out a daily update also. They were talking about clusters. And at the time, they had 34 positives, and they had six clusters, which involved 17. So the actually 32 positives. So the 17 was more than half of the positives that they had at the time were in clusters. And then that was followed by, I don't remember the number, but I think it was 10 clusters, and it was 20-something cases. And again, it was still half of the cases were in clusters. And then after that, it kind of got into the too many account category, and they just stopped talking about the clusters. But the numbers kept going up. And the number of cases now in Guangdong province is over 700. So they have over 700 confirmed there now. And then there was another paper that was written on the cluster in Shenzhen. And they described the family that went to Wuhan to visit relatives, and they got infected, and they came back and infected another family member in Shenzhen. So that was another example of human-to-human transmission. And then that was the one that had an 8-year-old grandson, a 10-year-old, and they wanted to have him tested, even though he tested negative for the virus on PCR and he didn't have any symptoms. And they ended up doing the CT scan and showed that his lungs had been damaged by the virus and either currently had the virus or previously had the virus, even though he was asymptomatic and tested negative. And then sequences came out from that cluster, only two of them, and they didn't give the age and gender. So it's still a little bit unclear whether that cluster is the same as the cluster I had seen. Both of them are in Shenzhen. That cluster that was written up in New England Journal of Medicine had the same mutations as the one I saw, but one of them actually had two additional mutations. So it wasn't clear that it was the same cluster, and it could have been two different clusters in Shenzhen that had that same combination. And then there was another sequence out of Shenzhen that had the three mutations again. And then there was a sixth sequence out of Shenzhen that had two of the three. And the one upstream had been replaced by a segment that had 22 mutations in it. And so it had recombined and it had overwritten the one in the 1AB with another segment that had a whole series. It had a cluster of mutations. I mean, they were just one right after the other. And it had like 22 in that region. So that was more evidence of it recombining And then there was further evidence of it recombining in the sequence in Chicago. So the sequence in Chicago not only had the two that I said, the ORF8 and the one upstream, but between those two, it had three mutations thrown in. And then after the ORF8, it had another mutation that was shared with two different sequences from Guangdong province. One was from Foshan, and the other one was from Shenzhen again. And so that was more evidence of recombination. And then the sequence in Chicago had mixed signals at every one of its mutations, indicating that that person was infected with two different novel coronaviruses. And so it was giving a mixed signal, indicating that there was so much virus in Shenzhen that this one person had two different lineages simultaneously in the sample that was collected. Right. And the one in, and the one from England also has a mixed signal at one of the positions, not everyone, but one of them, saying that that person had a low level of a second virus and it didn't show up in the other one. And then another sequence came out and showed that these two markers were actually in Wuhan. And so this was an early case in Wuhan that had the ORF8 mutation and the one upstream. So the reason I was going through this in a little bit more detail is the concern that this particular lineage is becoming more common. And that's kind of what happened with SARS. What happened with SARS is the outbreak started kind of slowly. I mean, it was being reported as a mystery disease in Guangdong province. And ProMed was the kind of like a newsletter for clinicians on different types of diseases around the world, and they were getting people in Guangdong province that were telling them about this mystery disease. They were reporting it. The government was basically keeping it under wraps and denying that it even existed. Mm-hmm. And then when the physician who was treating patients in Guangdong province came to Hong Kong for a wedding, he was very ill. He went to the Metropole Hotel. He kind of, he's only there for a day, but he vomited in the hallway, and they vacuumed up the vomit once it dried, and they ended up infecting something like seven people on the ninth floor, and then several others on other ones. And then they took off and went to, I mean, they were tourists in Hong Kong, and they were staying at that hotel. And then they left. And then in March, the reports started coming in from Toronto and from Singapore and from Hanoi and from Hong Kong that they all had this mystery disease. And what they all had in common, though, is they had been infected by this one person. And his sequence had a 29 nucleotide deletion in the ORF18. So he had a more extensive mutation, which pretty much broke that gene into two pieces, because it was a big deletion and it wasn't divisible by three. So it kind of stopped the sequence in one, the front end of it. So it was too short. And then the back end of it kind of picked up again and made another protein. So it was able to make two different proteins. But in any event, that virus became more virulent and more transmissible. Yeah. And all of the sequences from all the international cases had the same 29 nucleotide deletion. So the concern is that if there's a mutation in the same gene, even if it's not the same mutation, but if it ends up knocking out that function like the 29 nucleotide deletion did, that it could have the same type of effect, where it makes it more transmissible and it makes it more lethal. And what's happened in Wuhan is it seems that the virus started taking off. The numbers started going up, and people that were looking at this, scientists in China, were essentially saying, well, there must be a mutation because the behavior of the virus has changed. It's now more transmissible. They're getting these cases to go up. And so now the sequence is coming out. I mean, that's one of the ways that you can get a good monitoring of what's going on in China is to see what virus is coming out. So you're seeing what virus is showing up in different countries. And if it's, you know, a little bit different and the same change, the same mutations are showing up in multiple clusters outside of China, then that says that that mutation is probably becoming more common in China. And they haven't released a whole lot of sequences in the last week or so. I mean, they were real good initially. And like I say, we've got this Shenzhen and these other Guangdong province sequences. There have been a few here and there that have come out. The few here and there haven't been that interesting. They looked a lot like the original Wuhan, even though they came from northern China. And there were some other ones that came from Guangdong province that were similar to that. But the sequences are now starting to come out in other countries that are sequencing very quickly. So the U.S. has been very fast on getting the first five positives were all sequenced by last week. And now there's kind of this new wave of sequences that I just mentioned. That there's now two in Santa Clara, two in San Benito, one in Boston. None of those sequences are out yet, but they just started on Friday. But I think those sequences will come out this week, at least some of those. And the one from Chicago, the second case in Chicago hasn't come out, but that one's almost definitely going to be the first one. So the first one's out, and it's just going to be a confirmation of that. But,
okay. I got a few things I got to jump in here, too. Go ahead.
Okay. I was just saying, as these sequences come out, we'll have a better idea how common this one with the ORV8 mutation is. There's one other one that's fairly common that's actually in the only sequence from the U.S. that doesn't have the ORV8, and that one matches a cluster in France, and it also matches at least the first person in Australia, and there's not sure how big those clusters. Well, I know there's about 10 cases now in Australia, but I know the relationship to them, to each other, as well as to this first one. But that's the other one that's showing up in multiple places, and it's got a distinct lineage. And then, you had some questions. I was going to give an update on what's going on in Germany, but if you had a couple of questions on what I already said.
Well, just real quickly, I'll just mention these headlines. The evacuees that were taken out of Wuhan by the French government, 20 of them apparently are exhibiting symptoms, and the World Health Organization is warning to prepare for local outbreaks, as apparently these and other people move back into the communities. That's the concern. Carnival Cruise Lines admits to a confirmed coronavirus case 6 days after the conclusion of a huge cruise. All right? So,
okay.
There you go. Go ahead.
I haven't heard of either of those. I've got to check those out. I mean, there were two of the evacuees to Germany are positive. So
correct, I got that too.
And that was 115, and I think three to Japan were positive that had evacuated.
Correct.
And
correct.
And I think it was one to the U.S. had symptoms.
But I never heard of any conclusion about that. One, I think, one did have. Yeah.
Right. And they quarantined that person. And then one wasn't allowed to get on the plane. And I don't remember if that was U.S. or not, but there was somebody that was going to be evacuated that had symptoms there, and they couldn't get on the plane because kind of.
Go ahead and give us Germany here, and we can stretch it for 2 minutes, but that's it. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, real quickly, the Germany started with this associate from Shanghai, and she was asymptomatic or had mild symptoms while she was there. It got more severe as she flew back to Shanghai. And then she infected, first it was one person at the company. It was an auto supply company in Germany. And then there were reports that four more were infected. And then it got up to six or seven at the company were infected. And then there was a report out of the Canary Islands that person had been exposed to a couple people in Germany, which would have been those. And all the cases in Germany were part of this cluster. And so there was one in the Canary Islands, and they had a couple other people that were flying with them that would have been from the company. And then one of the children of the employees was infected. And then that brought the number up to 10 in six different cities. And then today, two more were added to that. Another child, actually the same person. So there's two children of one of the employees are now positive. And another employee was positive. So the number in Germany are 10. Most of these are German. They're not Chinese. And they gave specifics on the initial ones. I think it was something like five were German and two were Chinese heritage. And they might have been citizens of Germany, or they might have just been there working. But they were employees of the company they lived in and around Munich. And so that's what the numbers are. The numbers keep on creeping up. And Germany has 12 now, two of which were part of that evacuation group from Wuhan, and the other the others were all related to this auto supply company. So it's definitely getting bigger there. And there.
All right. All right. We have to say good night for this evening. Thank you again. For all of you listening, Henry is here every night. We will bring you the latest at the news site, Rents.com, or you can go to altnews.net. Either way, it's all there for you. Be very careful. Let's see out there if other people begin to understand how to compute a case fatality rate.
Yeah.
We have been the only source.
But it's not 2.2%.
All right. So when you see that, just remember. All right. Thanks, Henry. Talk to you tomorrow.
Okay. See you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
And thanks to all of you for being here. I hope this helps. There's a lot of disinformation out there. It's to be expected.